Getche, Ayaag, Bezendaya, our elders, listen to them, focuses on personal histories of our Ojibwe elders of Minnesota. This program includes personal historic knowledge of the changes they've experienced in Indian country and beyond. Getche Ayaag Bezendaya includes the changes they've seen due to the federal Indian policy as well as state policy. This program targets villages and communities within the boundaries of the White Earth Indian Reservation and beyond to other Ojibwe reservations in our state. Getche Ayaag Bezendaya, our elders, listen to them.
Good afternoon. This is Shar from Niji Radio, 89.9 FM. And this afternoon, I'm visiting with Joyce Arndt, who is Anishinaabe Ikwe from White Earth Nation. Hi, Joyce. How are you doing today?
I'm doing really good today. I worked the weekend and a little bit tired, but it's a beautiful sunshiny day out there, so I feel good.
Anything that you want to share in regards of who you are and where you came from and your parents, whatever you would like us to know about you?
Yeah, I was trying to prepare a little bit for the interview. I don't feel like an elder. I just had a birthday a few weeks ago, and I told everybody that I turned 29. And I met a lot of other 29-year-olds at the time, and that was kind of fun. But as an elder, I look back over my life and the many journeys that I've taken through my time here on Earth. I'm currently 65 years old. I guess that makes me an elder. I have spent most of my life being an artist and writer, speaker, nurse, and basically an advocate. Whenever I get a chance to do that, I worked for Hennepin County Child Protection for 8.5 years, and I've got 8.5 years of memories of what happens to kids and their whole family, actually. It's pretty sad what is happening to our kids nowadays, and probably has been going on for some time. We didn't have the organizations or the protocol to deal with the problems out there. Currently, I am a retired nurse, but I worked for the reservation just as a mental health nurse, and I got to see things there also about what goes on in our community. Monday mornings were hard because we would just get a little report on what had happened over the weekend, the suicide attempts, the overdoses, who was really having big problems over the weekend. A lot of them were based on drug abuse, alcohol, violence, and I'm not saying that is an identity of our community, because I know a lot of people that don't live with that violence and with the drugs and the alcohol, and they've got their own wonderful journeys to talk about and what they've learned in living a rough life, which I have. I guess I look back and I've lived a pretty rough life. I was born to an 18-year-old Native woman. I was her first child. I was removed from her care almost immediately as an infant. I have a half-sister, Barb, in the cities who recently has been telling me things that she remembers about when I was a baby, and those things are so valuable to me. Through my whole life, I've never really heard stories of little Joycey and different things I experienced as a small child. It's really nice to hear those stories. I was in 15 foster homes from infancy till I was 17, when I just absolutely refused to stay in foster care any longer. And I learned a lot. At one of the places where I worked, they had a workshop. They showed on the board a big pie divided up into areas. And one of the areas was the people in your life that were paid to be in your life. And I realized that everybody in my life was paid to be in my life. We had to just identify my life as a foster child. And I had a major anxiety attack. I had to leave the room because I realized that everybody in my life was paid to be in my life. Social workers were paid, foster parents were paid. Anybody that had anything to do with me was given a check to be a part of my life. And that was just really upsetting to realize that there's a lot of people out there that people were in their lives just because they wanted to be. They didn't have to be paid to. But that was a big wake-up call for me and made me feel more and more like a little Cabbage Patch Kid, which I felt growing up, going from foster home. Every time I had a social worker that would say, I'm going to pick you up from school, we're going to go out and have a Coke, I knew ahead of time that you're going to be going to a new foster home, and all this stuff. And there were many reasons. It was mainly sickness. Back then, you had to have doctor's statements saying you were healthy enough to be a foster parent. Sometimes the foster parent got divorced. Sometimes they just decided they didn't want to do foster care anymore. There were so many reasons. When I was young, and one of the reasons when I was little, the first foster home that I remember, I had to leave there because I was like, I went there when I was 21 months old, and they were in their 60s and they didn't feel it was appropriate placement because they were in their 60s and I was a baby, and they thought, well, the age difference, these people are going to die and this little girl, she'll be attached. So they took me away from them to prevent future sadness, which I had anyway by leaving there.
Now, when you were placed in foster care, was it from birth to when you graduated from high school?
I never graduated from high school. I did go and get my GED. I was removed from my mom because she was an alcoholic and she would leave me places and forget where she put me. And then my Grandma Jackson would have to go look for me and rescue me.
Mm-hmm.
My biological father, I found out years later when I was like 30, I went to Catholic Charities and I wanted to know a little bit about myself. And they told me that my father had actually petitioned for custody when I was a baby, but they denied him. They said he already had enough kids and I was the youngest of his 5 children. So I didn't get to go live with him. I was 21 months old the first time that I remember being in a foster home, and they were very wonderful, nurturing people. Then I went to another home. That home was in Verndale. And then they took me down to the cities to Bloomington and brought me to another foster home. And they said that when I walked in, I looked like a little old lady. They had me dressed in a long dress and long stockings and like laced up boots and everything. They just had me dressed so old-fashioned. I just wish they would have gotten a picture of me.
So you haven't seen any pictures of yourself when you were little?
No. Very little. Okay. I think the first one that I remember, maybe I was like 5. Don't have any baby pictures. And I don't know if I had a baby blanket. And there's so many things that I don't know anything about. I never met Grace Willis, who was my mother. I was 16, and I decided to search on my own, and I went to a celebration in Bemidji. It was the 4th of July, and I just started asking people if they knew Grace Willis or Robert Jackson. And I finally ran into someone that knew them, and there was an uncle that I met, and he gave me a phone number of another uncle in the cities. He said that if I call that number, he'll tell me where my mom is. So I had that number, and I ran away from my foster home and hitchhiked down the cities and called that number, and the man answered, and I told him who I was. I said, I'm looking for my mother. And I was told that you know how I can find her. He said, well, I'm really, really sorry to tell you this, but your mother passed away a month ago. So I missed meeting my mother by a month.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. But when I look back on that, I think she was an alcoholic and she actually died from alcoholism. And I think me being 16 and quite the mess that I was probably wouldn't have been a good thing for us to meet. I do a lot of writing about that. I wrote a poem once about never having looked into my mother's eyes. And I read that once at a group, and a man that had been adopted and never met his parents, he got quite moved by that. I really enjoy sharing the times that I've had where lights have come on and I get to examine something. I walk around and look at things like the whole experience of not meeting my mother. I did actually write a letter to her a couple years ago, and I told her that if she would have waited for me and not died, that I would have just wrapped my arms around her and hugged her. And I'm talking about a much older Joyce, not the 16-year-old. I don't think I would have been capable of doing that back then. But now I would treat her very well. And with respect, I would tell her that I forgave her for any mistakes that affected my life. And that I was okay. And that I had survived and become somewhat of a nice young lady.
Funding for this program has been made possible through the voters of the state Minnesota through a grant from the Art, Culture, and Heritage Fund. To hear more, feel free to visit www.nijiradio.org. That is www.nijiradio.org. Miigwech.